Hello, everybody. Welcome to the final Friday Filibuster of the year. And that is correct, right? Yes, this will be the final Friday Filibuster of the year. And it is our annual awards. It is awards night. It is our annual awards program, The Busters. So welcome, everybody. Hopefully the paparazzi hasn't bugged you too much. Mac, right? Am I right or am I right?
Oh, man, they're everywhere on the red carpet outside.
They are everywhere. But Mac, being in the field of journalism, called in a few favors, and he got them cordoned off a little bit. So, Mac, we appreciate that. My family appreciates that. So, but we have a new addition to our crew here for his first Busters, Daryl Loomis.
Hey.
I trust you are wearing a tux with no pants. I believe that's the standard dressing.
A tuxedo t-shirt.
Yes, tuxedo t-shirt. Nice. That's right. Yes. And then along Daryl, we have Eric Asherslager.
I remember not to wear pants anyway.
You just remember not. Well, you remember after all the faithful.
The paparazzi loved that.
They had a field day. Mac McIntyre again for.
I can do.
What was this, fifth? How many Busters have we done? That's a good.
That's a good question. We gotta look that up.
We'll have to get our intern / historian on it. So, actually, no, we need to hire an intern. And then myself, David Johnson. So we're gonna have some fun here. We've got some fun categories to work our way through, including a new addition to the show because ratings were so down last year. they asked us to spice it up. So we've got an ambush category where the esteemed Chief Justice Mike Staley emailed us a surprise category, sight unseen, which we'll throw out to each other and on the balls of our feet try to come up with something. So, but let's get...
For a minute there, I thought you were going to say you're going to spice it up with more musical numbers. Yeah.
I've been working on something.
Okay. We'll put that at the end of the podcast. So that'll be our hidden track, like those hidden CD tracks of the mid-90s. Remember, those are great.
Just keep fast-forwarding at the end of the podcast.
Keep fast-forwarding, yeah.
83 minutes in.
And then you get the Offspring singing a Barney song. Congratulations. All right, so let's kick it right off, Mac. Why don't you start us off with the first award of the night?
All right. First of all, we're going to go talk about our favorite and least. We don't do best and worst. We do favorite and least favorite.
That's right.
Of 2012.
We're a very subjective postmodern podcast.
Yes, because it's all good.
Yes.
So our first up is our favorite villain death.
Favorite villain death. Daryl, you're the rookie. This is your hazing. You're going to go first. So what is your selection for best villain or / favorite villain death for 2012? This applies to TV.
My favorite villain death of 2012 actually comes from the movie I was probably most surprised by in 2012, in Snow White and the Huntsman.
Oh yeah,
A movie that I got. I don't normally receive
mainstream.
Yeah, and not a lot.
That's but, that's a nice way of putting it.
But I got that, and was really pleasantly surprised by the whole picture. Not all of it, as we'll probably see later. But my favorite villain death of the year was Charlize Theron as Ravenna, the Evil Queen. In that, after it all comes down, and she gets stabbed in the heart by Snow White, whatever. It goes to one of the sort of tropes that I've always really, really liked. And that's the, like, undead person getting killed and then withering into nothing.
Oh, good, yeah. And good stuff.
Flying into dust. And I've always loved that. And she really made that movie. Charlize Theron did. Her performance was great. And the whole bit at the end was really solid. And, so yeah, I'm going with Ravenna. Snow White and the Huntsman.
So the CGI was well implemented for this?
CGI was solid, solid.
Nice.
Very
and that's, solid. It's too late now, but of course, spoiler warning.
Spoiler warning, whatever.
So spoilers abound. So excellent. All right, Eric, what is your selection for best villain death of 2012?
Favorite. All right, well, 2012 was marked by many things, Dave.
Yes, it was.
One of the things about 2012 is it was the year of trying not to spoil Cabin in the Woods for people.
Oh, boy.
And I will continue to do that here as best I can.
Okay.
However, my pick for favorite villain death is Bradley Whitford's character's demise in Cabin in the Woods.
Yes, a movie I desperately need to see.
I haven't seen it either.
I will say it's poetic.
Okay.
In its own.
man.
So I'll leave it at that since I can't.
Yeah.
I don't want to root it for you, Dave.
Yeah, but, much appreciated because that's probably like I pretty much have no clue about that movie. I just know it's awesome, and the Joss Whedon factory is involved somehow. So yes, I need to see that. So much appreciated. So hey, Mac, how about you? Best favorite villain death.
Is it too late to change mine to so it's the same as Eric's?
Sorry,
that was such a good pick. Now for mine, I went to The Hunger Games.
Oh, did you? Between you and Daryl, you've got our pre-adolescent listenership nailed down. So thank you.
That's right. Yeah. it's actually a great villain death. The character, I had to look it up. The character's name for some reason is Kato, but it's not Kato from the Green Hornet.
Or Kato from Pit Fighter.
Right. He goes out big time in the final battle. He gets the crap beaten out of him. Then he gets shot with an arrow. Then he falls. And as he falls, he lands right in the middle of all those big dog things and they all chew him apart.
Ooh, wow.
So, yeah, he didn't just go out. He went out in a big way.
It's like the way Scar went out in Lion King, huh?
Kind of, yeah.
Nice.
Although he didn't get an arrow.
He didn't get an arrow. That's true. Very good. Okay, mine is from the Star series Spartacus Vengeance. Obviously, it's a continuation of Spartacus Blood and Sand. It stars big tentpole series, super violent, telling of the Spartacus myth. I won't say who it is, but a main bad guy, a big-time bad guy, so someone you've been building up to seeing get wasted for a long time, finally gets his, and it is a slow-motion sword in the mouth. The guy is on his knees looking up at Spartacus, and Spartacus rams his sword to the hilt into this guy's mouth. And it's a combination of CGI, obviously, but just like really frothy, bubbly.
Does it come out the back of his neck, or is
It goes down the gullet, my friend. This isn't the back of the neck. This is down the gullet into the colon, perhaps. But yeah, he gets. But trust me, he deserves it.
True swordsman.
Is it true? Yeah, so, so this is a show known for its over the topness, and it somehow managed to go even more over the top than its previous over the topness. So, yeah, so a very earned villain death. All right, so the next one is favorite action scene. Mac, why don't we start with you on this one? Action scene 2012.
Went with a recent one. I went with The Hobbit.
Yes.
And I was trying to look up the name of this location. I couldn't find it. It's Tolkien. It must have a name.
New Zealand, right?
Yes. It's the chase through the goblin tunnels.
The Misty Mountains, I believe.
Isn't the Misty Mountain where they're going to their final destination?
No, it's a Lonely Mountain.
The Lonely Mountain. Oh, yeah.
It's the hippest Hobbit singles bar you can find.
the goblins, they're not as good at building the interior of mountains as the dwarves are.
Yes.
Because
a lot of shoddy craftsmanship.
Yes, those rickety wooden walkways, they fall apart real easily. They're built very haphazardly, kind of without any direction. So you have all these rickety wooden walkways going off in every which direction, which isn't very sensible planning, but makes for some great action.
If any civilization needs infrastructure stimulus spending, it is the goblins.
Yes. Although there was that one little guy with the pad, and he had his little pulley system.
That was pretty good.
He was awesome.
That was a pretty good conveyance. You're right.
That was my favorite character in the whole movie. But
he's like the Salacious Crumb of the Hobbit.
Exactly. just running around all those pathways, they're all breaking apart and falling apart, and people are falling off of them and onto
Peter
them.
Jackson, like, finds every gag, like I say gag in the way there's the setups. He finds every way to use that, to use that setting. So the dwarves utilize every possible way. Any way you can use rickety wood constructs to dispatch goblins, he finds a way. So
that's right, yeah. So it was really exciting, just real roller coaster ride stuff.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, and even the big fat dwarf got his hero moment by spinning his spear around really fast.
He did.
So I was glad to see he wasn't just comic relief, that he got to be cool too.
He was useful. Very good. Daryl, favorite action scene, 2012.
My favorite action scene of 2012 is the Home Alone scene in Skyfall.
Good call.
Nice.
Good call.
The homemade weapons, the sort of trifecta between Daniel Craig, Judi Dench, and Albert Finney, two old folks and, James Bond, and exploding light bulbs and all that bit totally got me. Absolutely was my favorite action bit in 12.
Nice. Yeah, very good. nice slow burn and a good kind of capitalizing on that too.
You can't go wrong with homemade weapons.
You can't go wrong. There's a reason Home Alone is like the fifth highest grossing.
Right.
And it's not this fat, stupid older brother who puts such pleasure on the tarantulas either. So. All right, Eric, favorite action scene, 2012.
All right, going back to the beginning of the year, there are many good action scenes in the movie The Gray, but I'm gonna go to the plane crash, the beginning of the movie, and just on Blu-ray, that movie really blew me away with the sound mix, but that scene very lifelike and terrifying. An unconventional pick perhaps for action scene, but man, they really nailed the feeling of falling out of the sky into an Alaskan wilderness.
that means something.
It does.
Well, I'm glad Mac didn't steal mine, but it is the entirety of the final fight in the Raid Redemption.
Oh, yes.
Probably the greatest cinematic fight scene I've ever seen. It's a 2-on-1 brawl that's nothing is, it's not edited so you don't see anything. The camera pulls back and it's just three amazing stunt performers just beating the living chinole out of each other, but it is... I mean, and that, Eric, you mentioned the sound, how that works. I mean, sound playing into the Raid, the score just completely builds as this fight goes on. And actually, Mac, you could probably agree that the villain death scene in that is pretty cool as well. So,
right.
Very brutal, super intense, super visceral, and unending. Just when you think it's over and these guys can't take any more punishment. It's like the next phase kicks in, like ridiculous. So, okay, Mac, what is our next category?
Our next category, would be our guilty pleasure, the movie or show that you are hesitant about publicly liking.
All right, this is where you get emasculated. So, Eric, why don't you kick us off?
Well, this one, I think mostly because Zooey Deschanel has sort of gone out of favor, I think, among a lot of people. But we still enjoy watching the show The New Girl. I guess it is. Yeah, it's a show we watch. We enjoy, I mean, there's a certain class of TV show that I will watch with the wife, and that is one of them. And one that I would I will laugh at enough to call it a pleasure.
All right.
So cute.
She is bubbly. It's cute.
She's fine. I got nothing against her. Daryl hates everything. I'm the opposite. She's fine.
The Amazon reviewer for New Girl described her as said she's adorkable.
Oh boy!
Oh, yeah.
Throw up in the mouth. Throw up goes.
She's wearing pajamas right now.
Adorkable. Oh boy! All right, please, Lexicon, do not adopt that. Mac, how about you? Give me your guilty pleasure.
For my guilty pleasure, I went to a show on the Disney Channel.
Oh boy.
Which you wouldn't think of for its edgy programming. Disney Channel is not going to give us the next Breaking Bad.
No.
But if you didn't know this was a Disney Channel show, you'd never guess. And so I'm trying to champion the show, even though it's got the Disney Channel stigma. It's called Gravity Falls.
Okay, Gravity
Falls. And I swear, put the Disney stuff out of your mind because it's a really, really good show. It's an animated show. It's the small town where weird things happen genre.
Yep.
And it's very clever. It's very funny. The voice acting is just spot on. The visuals are kind of bizarre, but very well animated. And there's really nothing like it on TV. It's just very, very out there. And so I've been encouraging people to give it a chance, but they're all like, oh, Disney Channel, so what, it's Hannah Montana? And I'm like, oh, well, okay. So.
Is right. Hannah Montana in it?
Not that I know of.
I don't think, from the footage I've seen, I think Miley Cyrus is moving on to more mature content. So, Daryl, what is your guilty pleasure? And I'm not even sure if I'm ready to find out what guilts you into something. So,
well, see, that's the sort of the problem with this category. So I'm going with, it still is true to this day and has been true for many, many years. My big guilty pleasure is that at, nearly 40 years old, I still sit down and watch pro wrestling once in a while.
All right.
I will turn on TNA, and I will turn on WWE, Raw, SmackDown. Not as much as I used to, but I still read about it online. I still know who all the people are. I still have, interest in the backstage machinations, which is probably the most interesting part of the whole industry. I love to watch dudes in tights run around.
There you go.
I just can't deny it.
Have you ever considered kids pro wrestling, NWF kids pro wrestling? I've heard great things about that promotion.
I do not know this promotion.
Okay, you get DVD. Why don't you search for that on DVD for that, get back to us. So. All right, Daryl, thank you for admitting your problem. Mine. We're going to go early in the year as well. And I'm shocked it's still in my collection here, but Wrath of the Titans.
Oh, wow.
Clash of the Titans sucked. I totally admit it. It stunk. But the sequel that got greenlit somehow, I have no idea why, should be equally terrible. But I enjoyed Wrath of the Titans way more than I thought I would. And it's got the same kind of, you know, Sam Worthington in the same wooden actor role, Liam Neeson hamming it up as Zeus. It's got actually a pretty impressive cast, but there's something about it. I think it's a road movie pretty much, and which I tend to like. And Perseus, that's Sam Worthington's character and his son. So the father son thing, that's kind of a cool concept. And there's some decent action, and the effects are okay. And Zeus and Hades band together and like start wasting dudes at the end. And I can't tell you. And it's just one of those. Maybe it's an endless, but Wrath of the Titans. I actually want to watch Wrath of the Titans now for some reason. yes. Okay. So now we're going to move into a next phase. This is our custom categories where each of us have picked a specific unique category. So we're going to start with Max's category. So Mac, this is one of your favorites. This has been a mainstay in the Busters.
Yes, we did it for a while. Last year we took it off the roster.
Yes. Much clamoring.
I decided to go ahead and bring it back this year. This is the biggest WTF moment of the year.
Biggest WTF moment. So I'll go first. Really, I could say the entirety of this film, which is Karate Robo Zabergor. But I'm going to go with, there's just an unending craziness. This is just ridiculous. This is a Japanese, I think it's anime. There's some kind of historical, the Karate Robo brand is, you know, predates this film, I think. But regardless, it's all crazy. But there's one that's specifically WTF-erific, and it's the reveal that the robot motorcycle our hero operates possesses the spirit of our hero's dead brother, who died as an infant because of breast milk poisoning from his father.
From his father?
Yes, his father breastfed the twin infants, and one survived and the other died. And there's
sounds like one of my screenplay ideas.
There is a scene.
Nobody wants to see that.
There is a scene with two infants, one of whom is dead, and he just puts the cover over him, and then he imbibes a spirit into the motorcycle. So, yeah. And that's probably the tamest in the movie. I mean, I'm not going to go into the tentacle cyborg sex that happens later, but trust me, it's insanity. So, yeah, that gets it for me. And I would... As crazy as it sounds, it's not like this big R-rated thing. It's just surreal and weird, and it's pretty entertaining. Pretty entertaining. So. Okay, so Eric, how about you? Your biggest WTF moment?
Well, I'm going to take a step back from the actual content of a movie or a TV show and talk about the general entertainment world. I'm going to go with picking of James Gunn to direct Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, good.
Nice. The general trend of what I thought was kind of a genre I was sort of done with, the comic book genre. I am newly excited for people like James Gunn and Edgar Wright and Joss Whedon coming back for Avengers 2. Like there's a whole bunch of superhero movies that are going to be made that I'm interested in watching, even after I thought I was tired of the whole thing. So,
especially because of the directors chosen?
Absolutely, because of the directors. Entirely because of the directors.
Nice. Well, I appreciate that. That's good movie news you wove into the ceremony.
Thank you.
Very
well,
good.
Nice. Yeah.
Very good. Daryl, WTF. I expect big things from you.
It's not a content thing because I actually haven't seen that much that this year that would really qualify for that. But my big WTF moment of the year was the fact that after all this time and after all the hype and after everything quieted down for it, that this stupid Red Dawn remake was finally actually released.
Oh. You know, I didn't realize the extent of its tortured past either.
You know, it, I heard, I think I first heard about it in 2008. And I mean, it's funny. The original movie is funny, but incredibly stupid. You know, it's one big point is that every time I see the word Wolverine, it, my head screams out, Wolverines! But, you know, it had lots of young stars and whatever, and the only thing I can think is that because Chris Hemsworth, and I think there's another, I think there's another star that's actually become something since they filmed the movie, is the only reason it ever got released. It's the kind of movie that seems like the thing that sits on the shelf for 25 years. Like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The New Beginning, or The New Generation, is Texas Chainsaw Massacre 4. The only reason they ever finally released it to video was because suddenly Matthew McConaughey and Renee Zellweger were big stars.
That's right.
And so they were, but it was so awful. They had no intention to release it. They had no intention to make money off of it. But through all of this garbage that it's gone through, between starting with the Chinese villains, turning it to the North Korean villains, all of this stuff, they finally like, we've spent so much money on it, we've got to release it and see what happens. And I couldn't believe it. And it is, I haven't seen it, so I don't know the. I don't know the actual final result, but I can't imagine it's anything beyond.
Yeah, it's not logging great consensus reviews. So yeah.
Oh, good lord.
Yeah. All right, Mac.
All right. For mine, instead of a movie or TV show, I went to the world of live theater.
Well, this is the most esoteric topic we've ever had. All right.
Back in March, I took a trip to New York City and experienced a little something called Sleep No More. It's a theater experience, but it's not like you sit down and you watch a show. It's five floors of an old hotel that have been converted into this space that the audience actually walks through, and you interact with the actors and whatnot. And it sort of tells a story, but mostly it's just very bizarre and weird and otherworldly. And it's the more and more I describe of Sleep No More, the farther down the rabbit hole you guys go. So,
yes.
Everyone in the audience wears a mask and is not allowed to speak. The only people not wearing masks are the actors. And you can follow actors from room to room, or you could just go and explore on your own and encounter them wherever you go. And it gets stranger and stranger the deeper and deeper you get into it, until finally, if you're lucky enough, you turn around a corner and you end up in the witch's rave inside Sleep No More. Spoiler, it's the fourth floor. Was it the third? It gets confusing in there. But because there are these stairways and they go in different directions, and only some of them are marked and others aren't. It's like Hogwarts. But there's a witch's rave that involves a guy with a goat's head and a bald woman and like a dead baby and blood everywhere, and all set to this like techno music that's just unbelievably loud.
Can't wait till Tom Hooper tackles the Hollywood remake for this one.
And that's just one scene going on among this whole like five-story building. So
nice. Yeah.
By the way, it's actually good. Don't get me wrong. It was an amazing experience. I recommend it to everybody. But it's out there.
Sounds it. Very good. Well, that was a good assortment of things to work with this category. Nicely done, Max. So why don't you take it to our next one?
Okay. Eric, what is your topic?
A little boring, but I have an answer. So best DVD or Blu-ray catalog release. So something from the past, not a brand new movie, but something that got a notable release in 2012.
Best or favorite. So
best or favorite. I forgot the politically correct language.
Yeah, politically, yes. No, there's no objective truth.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
No objective truth.
Favorite.
Yeah, because if it's best, then I lose mine. So it can't be. Mine cannot qualify as best anything. But, Daryl, why don't we kick off with you?
All right, I'm going with the Blu-ray release of Sunset Boulevard, a Billy Wilder movie with Gloria Swanson. I think I talked about it briefly on a previous filibuster. But it's a movie that – it's sort of a – it's a strange movie in that in 1953 or whenever it was released, and Gloria Swanson, who was a big silent movie star, was had been out of movies for 20 years. Everybody had forgotten about her. And so it's the story of this writer who happens upon this ex-silent movie star named Norma Desmond, played by Gloria Swanson, who believes that she's going to have her big comeback in the movies. And so everybody, you know, the audience for the movie, especially the younger audience, really thought that Gloria Swanson and Norma Desmond were the same person. And so it created this sort of pre-meta film that is infinitely interesting to me. And the Blu-ray that was released is a full restoration, completely beautiful. There's like 3 hours of special features on it. Absolutely the most recommended catalog Blu-ray of the year for me.
Nice. All right, well, I'm going to go the opposite way with mine, and that will be the release I've been waiting for a while, Masters of the Universe on Blu-ray. And only because it's Masters of the Universe on Blu-ray, it's nothing different from the DVD itself. The transfer is so-so only, but I can dispatch with my Snapcase DVD and enjoy the adventures. But I will give you a little bonus here, because on the flip side, the disappointing catalog release, also starring Dolph Lundgren, was Red Scorpion.
I remember that.
Yeah, a movie I'd never watched, but I'd seen pictures and trailers and stuff for it forever. I thought, wow, that's probably awesome. And it finally came out on Blu-ray, and that was not so awesome. It was pretty boring, pretty disappointing. Awesome truck chase scene, but that was sullied by just a terrible decision for a score. And I just remember it was so bad. And then he cuts off the guy's arm at the end, and that's kind of cool. That's because Tom Savini did the makeup. But beyond that, Red Scorpion was a big bummer.
Yeah, Dolph Lundgren's really for me a real disappointing action star for that era.
Well, yeah, he had his opportunities, and I think he just picked his projects wrong. So, but anyway, I Masters of the Universe could obviously have gone in the guilty pleasure category as well, and I lived there for a little bit until I realized there were more things I was embarrassed by. But I'm happy to have that, and obviously I will. Here's a spoiler. Spoiler hint for next year's Busters. For this category, it will be Willow. So that's coming up Blu-ray. So that's a pro tip, next year's Busters. Mac, go ahead.
Okay. I'm not entirely sure where the line is drawn between catalog release and just release. But I went to our good friends at Warner Archive, who are doing a really great job of finding these incredibly obscure cult classics and making them available for people who want them. The downside to this is maybe the discs aren't of the best quality, but at least we've got these rarities. And, for example, they just released a Sidney Lumet's Death Trap as a Warner Archive disc, which is awesome. But my pick is a little bit more for the nostalgia fans, and it's the complete series of Shazam, the 1970s live-action Saturday morning kids show about this sort of wimpy, whiny little kid who drives around in the motorhome with his mentor, whose name is Mentor. And whenever there's trouble, like, you know, some other kid ran away from home or got his leg kind of stuck under a, you know, fallen tree, he says the magic word Shazam, transforms into Captain Marvel and saves the day. And in one episode, there's a villain, which is good. It's an evil drug dealer, and he catches the drug dealer. That was almost to the point where maybe it got somewhere near to being exciting. But beyond that, he's basically just, you know, rescuing kids and imparting important life lessons.
Very good. Well, so that's all you can ask.
Yes, so it's, you know, the nostalgia can't be beat.
Nice. All right. Next category is mine. So mine is...
Wait.
Yes, did I skip someone? Eric, did I miss you?
You didn't skip me. Skip me.
Oh, I apologize.
No, it's all right.
Oh, what was I thinking?
Still in this Daryl Eric problem. You never know.
It's okay.
You're becoming one. You're like Viggo the Carpathian merging with the baby Oscar.
That's fine.
Right. Go ahead, please.
Okay, so at the end of Cabin in the Woods, what happens... I won't spoil Cabin in the Woods. I'm saving it though, Dave. It's hanging over your head like a sword of Damocles. My pick, Killer Clowns from Outer Space came out on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And I think Dave, your caveat was a good one. Favorite, not best. It looks surprisingly good on Blu-ray. They did a pretty nice job with the transfer. Same.
Never really looked good before.
Yeah, and it looks and sounds great. It's an awesome movie. Same bonus features as an earlier DVD release, but they are comprehensive and it is well worth owning. So and there you go.
Is that a Troma distribution? That wasn't a Troma film, right?
No, it wasn't.
Is that a Troma disc?
I don't think it's Troma at all.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Okay. I guess I'd always had the impression it was a Troma film, maybe just from the content or whatever. But
probably.
No,
it wasn't. It was the Kyoto brothers did it, and that was it for them. Let's see. Okay. I will tell you, it was put out by MGM.
Oh, okay.
So there you go.
There you go. That's a pretty crazy film for them to put out.
Very good. Okay, so next up, my category, lamest hero. Mac, why don't you kick us off?
Really, there's no contest for me in this one. I'm going to go to the world of comic books. And this year, Spider-Man got his very own sidekick.
Oh, yes, we've heard, remember this guy.
Whose name is Alpha. Not Alf, Eric. Alpha.
Ah!
So for months, just tons of hype. Spider-Man's getting a sidekick. Just hype. All leading up to this big anniversary issue where we finally get to meet Spider-Man's sidekick, Alpha. And he's just the lamest character you could imagine. He's got all these amazing powers. He's an alpha level threat, which means it's, you know, if he wanted to, he could destroy the Earth. So they team up with Spider-Man so Spider-Man can teach him to be a hero. But he's not interested in being a hero. So he divorces his parents and he starts, you know, just sleeping with supermodels. And the Avengers call, say, we need you to save the Earth, but he's too busy hanging out with some girl.
She's like Tom Brady.
Yeah, really. And, so after all that hype, after all those months of hype and introducing this new character, a mere 3 months later, Alpha is written out of the story in only 3 pages.
So it was really? So it was yeah. like, a, was there a huge outcry from fans?
I think so, yeah. I don't think he was very popular. They're going to try to bring him back next year. They're going to give him his own miniseries next year, try to have him make some kind of a comeback. But I don't think it's going to sell well.
All right.
But it was only 3 pages. Alpha walked into the lab. Spider-Man threw a switch. Some sci-fi gizmo went off, and he lost all his powers. And that was it for Alpha.
If that switch technology was available to the Avengers prior, don't you think they should use that instead of sailing with Spider-Man?
But what do I know? I don't know.
What do I know? All right, Daryl, lamest hero.
My lamest hero goes back to the new-ish movie that I previously talked about, Snow White and the Huntsman. Kristen Stewart.
You're getting some. You're getting has, money's worth.
I'm getting. But that's the thing with the movie is that it's kind of a conflicting thing because Charlize Theron is awesome, and that character is a lot of fun. But Snow White as a sword wielding badass. Is not sold nothing for me. She is some silly princess until the end of the movie, and then in one cut, she can kill, you know, however many of Ravenna's forces. Of course, she, you know, wins in the end. Spoiler alert. It's Snow White. What the hell?
Does she get a training montage?
No, not even a training montage. There's apparently, just by virtue of hanging out with Chris Hemsworth, she through osmosis.
Yes, osmosis. Yes. Yeah, it's about the osmosis training.
is able to throw on a suit of armor and survive hundreds of villains, and to finally kill the queen. And all the while, she's just Kristen Stewart.
Now I'm trying to remember the movie. Doesn't she also spend her entire life in a jail cell
up until
the beginning of the movie, and then she escapes?
Yeah. About 20 minutes into the movie, she escapes, but her whole life is spent in a cell. There's no place where she could have learned anything, and so they just give her a sword, and then, as you say in Shazam, she's all over it. And you know, fairly, her performance itself isn't that bad, but as trying to build a character who can actually kick some ass, this is not it.
Mm.
And she's going to be in the sequel, or apparently going to be in some sequel, where that's going to go farther, as far as I can tell. So, you know, good
luck. It doesn't
help
that, like, she's weighs 90 pounds in real life either, you know? That's just
right. And she's, like, stares down a massive golem.
Mm. All right.
In the movie. So, yeah, terrible.
All right. Eric, lamest hero.
I'm going to go literally the lamest hero. Bruce Wayne in Dark Knight Rises. Because his leg doesn't work.
Yes.
See what I'm saying?
That's right.
See what I'm saying?
Triple chokes. That's what this project needed.
I was also disappointed by the movie. But, you know, he's Batman, so he gets some points. But, yeah, he, you know, his leg. He has the brace and stuff. And
he's no cartilage.
No, yeah, and then his back. And I mean, he's in rough shape.
He's rough shape. He's creaky. Rough shape.
I mean, what? He's like, you know, how old is Christian Bale? Like 35, 38?
Sure, 35, 38. 3, I have no idea. 38
years. You know, something like that, 40.
Pant size, right?
Who knows? But, you know, God knows the knees and the back and everything
first
are
to
just
go.
Totally ruined by then.
First to go.
Too much basketball at
too
the
much.
Gym.
Absolutely. I bet Batman's pretty good at basketball.
I bet he is.
He uses deception and, you know.
Yeah. The one problem is that Christopher Nolan's Batman always quits in the middle of a game.
Oh,
ouch. Sorry.
Oh, boy. Cheap shot. They can't all be Scott Pilgrim, Eric. They can't all be.
They can. That's absolutely right, Dave. You're absolutely right about that.
Okay. My lamest hero, Betty White from Betty White, Champion for Animals. for a DVD that expressly calls her a champion. She sucks. This DVD sucks. She's terrible. She's in it for probably 2 minutes. She has one little intro talking about how much she loves animals. And then she's gone from the movie, and it's just a series of wildlife vignettes. And then she shows up briefly, intermittently, and I got a direct quote. I'm going to get you a direct quote real quick here. But she shows up intermittently just to talk about, like, random animal facts not associated with anything that's really happening on screen. So I'm not sure what qualifies her as a champion, but we do get pearls of wisdom like this. Quote, if we don't start taking care of sharks, shame on us.
Oh, totally. So, no, totally right. I mean, what's the future of Shark Week without sharks?
I don't know. So I've ever Googled Betty White Champ for Animals. Whatever's on the cover doesn't exist. She's not cradling a baby crocodile.
But that reminds me of – that reminds me of, you know, and not to dispute you because I haven't seen the show, but – Pinhead only shows up in Hellraiser in the first 5 minutes and the last 5 minutes of the movie.
That's a good point. Yeah, but that, but it's not called Pinhead, Champion of Death.
So, no, but would that it were.
Would that it were. So, yeah. So don't expect anything that's the DVD's problem. There's no meerkat or koala on each shoulder staring at the camera. She is, I don't know what you have to do to become champion for animals, but it's the bare minimum if you're Betty White. So screw that.
She's like 90, though. You got to cut her some slack.
No. If she could show up in every piece of if she can worm her way into what you think is the most subversive show, you know, on TV, which is Community, then I don't – then she can – she should be a champion of animals. She should be like running on the Serengeti, cradling gazelles, shielding them from lions. Okay. So now we're in Daryl's category. What did you have, Daryl?
I want to know the movie or the TV show that most makes you long for the Mayan apocalypse having actually come true.
Okay. Eric, what do you got?
All right, well, this is another one of my patented unconventional picks, Dave.
Oh, good.
You know I'm it's a thing. My pick is the TV show Community. And I will tell you why.
Oh.
Because the end of the season 3 of Community brought with it such, you know, painful news, the departure of Dan Harmon. That would be all right if that was all the Community that was ever made and the Mayan apocalypse had happened and we were left.
Oh.
It was just those three.
Fair enough.
But who knows what's coming down the pike? Is that what you're saying?
Who knows?
Approaching with trepidation. Yeah.
Not really, but I like that show a lot. And I couldn't put it for another category later on, so I want to get it in here.
That's good.
Somewhere.
That makes sense. Mac, Mayan apocalypse.
There's only one choice for me for this category. Definitely Dark Shadows.
The remake.
It's painful. Painful.
Whether you like Dark Shadows or not, it's painful.
Yeah, it's just so misguided, so many questionable choices. So it's like, okay, when you think Dark Shadows, you think, what's the plot? Well, you've got Barnabas and Victoria are in love, and you've got Angelique is also in love with Barnabas, so she's trying to break up him and Victoria. That's a perfectly good plot for a movie, right? But instead of doing that plot, the movie just constantly throws in all this other extraneous stuff. And, like, Barnabas and Victoria maybe have, what, two scenes together? And we're supposed to buy that they've got this eternal romance? And there's all this jokey stuff that isn't funny. And then we get to the ending of the movie. The last 15 minutes is just... This could go under the WTF category, because it's just plot twist after plot twist after plot twist that wasn't set up earlier in the movie, just comes out of nowhere, and... You know, the argument is, oh, it's based on a soap opera, and they always have crazy last-minute plot twists. Well, what might work in a soap opera isn't going to work in a two-hour movie, and falls apart.
It really, I think that sort of encapsulates Tim Burton over the last 7 or 8 years, between, you know, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, that, you know, going all the way back to his remake of The Planet of the Apes. I think, got his heart in the right place, but his sense of humor and all of that stuff just doesn't fly anymore. None of it makes sense.
With Burton's lesser films, I still find something in them that I can hold on to and enjoy. But then Dark Shadows comes along, and it's such a disaster that I can't even anymore.
I still remain a big fan of Sleepy Hollow. That's probably the last one I really like.
I like Big Fish. You know,
Big Fish is good.
It was a fun movie, but
I like Sweeney Todd as well.
Yeah, Sweeney Todd felt the same as Dark Shadows and the others to me. Just too much. It's just too much.
Too much. All right. Well, Dark Shadows gets the old. So.
Oh yeah.
Okay, mine. Let's see, mine would be. Little DVD called Chips 99. Don't know why it exists. Don't know why it exists in the first place, or why I have to be subjected to it, you know, 12 years after the fact. It's reunion. It's Chips, you know, Eric Estrada and what's his face? Come back in 1999. They're all paunchy and old. They decide to take to the streets and their choppers and fight crime as a highway patrol.
You know, there's a little bit better suspension on those choppers.
a little bit tighter suspension. You're right. So, there's some terrible plotting about. I don't know, that's terrible. They show flashbacks. You know, they'll show flashbacks to actual. So they just cut to a scene from the television show, and that's it. That's how they show their flashbacks. My favorite, I think I've mentioned this, but my favorite scene is when they first spring into action. They see a bicyclist who is not obeying the laws of the street, blowing yield signs and just skirting, just treating the laws willy-nilly and causing near accidents. So they hop on their motorcycles and they chase the rapscallion down. And then they look at it and they realize he was – they flash back to a scene where they talk to some kid who got his bike for the first time. And it's the kid who grew up.
Good Lord.
And as far as I know – they let this douchebag go just because he was like 8 when they first met him. So that essentially set the table for Chips 99. It's just I don't know why they went to the effort of pressing an optical disc for this, but it existed. So there, Chips 99. And bring us to you, Daryl, your choice.
My choice. It would have been the same choice probably every year for the last 10 years, and that's in this case, That's My Boy. But as a general principle, the continued career of Adam Sandler.
Ah.
It's been since I graduated high school that he, and that's been a while now, that he made a decent movie. You can talk about, you know, Billy Madison's okay. The Happy Gilmore's okay. The Waterboy's even okay. but that gets you to sometime when I was in college. It is a stream of awful ideas and even worse movies. I don't understand how, like, even like Jack and Jill, which is god awful.
Yes.
With somebody less irritating could have potentially been a watchable film, but with him in the roles, it's absolutely unwatchable. And then that takes us to this year's That's My Boy, you know, ruining a guy like Andy Samberg, who I tend to like.
Yeah.
And just kicking him down onto Adam Sandler's level. And it's just absurd and insane to me that somebody out there in this world still pays money to get Adam Sandler in front of the camera.
All I know, he does it himself. But I have to say, the year before, you saw a confluence of two unwatchable forces, as far as I'm concerned. And Just Go With It from 2011 with Sandler and Jennifer Aniston.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, that sucked so bad.
That's hard. That's hard. Right. Like,
I had to do that one. That sucked.
I've watched a lot of rough stuff in my day.
Yeah.
But there's a certain level, like, I can review a Serbian film.
Oh, gosh.
And take it for what it is and accept it and internalize it. And for whatever, you know, things that go on in that movie that I cannot unsee, I would take 1,000 of those
over
a single Adam Sandler, Jennifer Aniston vehicle.
And Just Go With It is rough. Yeah.
Oh God. Yeah. I mean, it hurts me even to think about it.
All the worst qualities of both. Yeah. So I gotta. Okay. We're done. We're not.
Oh God.
We're done.
Sorry.
We're
yes.
All done with that. Yeah. So. All right, so, Mac, where are we next here? Are we on our ambush category?
All right, Dave, why don't you take us into our ambush category?
Okay, so this has been served up by Michael Staley. No, Sight Unseen. So here we go. Okay, here we go. Worst, this is going to be tough. Worst performance by a CGI creation. Worst performance by a CGI creation. This is going to be a tussie. Mm-hmm. I will go first. Worst performance by a CGI creation. That definitely has to go to the Avalanche and Snowmageddon. Terrible. Terrible. I mean, I thought Triple X's Avalanche is bad. This one's even worse. And worse because it's both, you know, lame and poorly filmed. And it's not even... It doesn't measure up to what Snowmageddon implies. You know, I was not given Snowmageddon, and I will also give you a runner-up too in a similar vein. Earlier this year, Metal Tornado. It's pretty terrible, pretty terrible. But at least we did get a Metal Tornado point of view shot, which was pretty, pretty
spinning around really fast.
Yeah.
Spin the camera around.
that was well played. But yeah, so that's going to be a tie. We'll do dead heat between the Metal Tornado and the Snowmageddon, both terrible CGI creations.
All right. I am going to go with the alien spaceships from Battleship.
Oh yeah. Oops. Or I would also you could probably count any of the human actors as well. In fact.
were they CGI enhanced?
Yeah, Taylor Kitsch I think counts as a CGI creation.
So they basically look like, you know, just something out of Transformers. They fire these big red metal peg things at the battleship, which I think are supposed to look like little things you stick on your toy battleship in the game.
Yeah, that's true. Or little light brights, you know.
Yeah, and that's like one of their super weapons. They've got shields, which are these big glowy things.
It's really muddy CGI, too. It's just kind of like muddy and hard delineated.
And they don't fly. They hop on the top surface of the water. Yeah. Sort of hop along like some kind of frog or something. It's like if they're alien spaceships, they could just fly, and then the battleship wouldn't be able to keep up. And Battleship.
Good one. And I'm glad the Battleship made its way in here. That was
It was my runner-up for Daryl's category, but
Battleship was rough. I was willing to cut it a lot of slack, and it burned through that pretty quick. I think as soon as the scene cut to the old farts operating the battleship.
Oh, you know, yeah.
Like, I love our much respect given to our brave men and World War II veterans, but those guys should have said, no, thank you. Get out, gentlemen, get out. You have better things to do. So, all right. Erica Darrell.
All right. Well, I kind of like this movie, but the lizard in The Amazing Spider-Man, kind of a rough design. Yeah. That was a movie that was rushed in its final stages, recut, and I don't know if the lizard was really part of that, but not the greatest design. So, lizard.
Yeah, lizard. Yeah, no.
If good. Only he had looked just a little bit more like the comic character.
Yeah.
All right.
So just me then, huh?
Yeah, just you.
All right. Well, I'm gonna go to the well one more time. Snow White and the Huntsman.
Oh man!
It's a clean sweep.
Trifecta.
We're gonna try to hit for the cycle. We got a couple more categories. So I'm gonna try to hit the cycle on this one.
Sure, that's gonna be your favorite TV show, but you'll make it work.
That's right. No, the show The Charmings reminded me.
Yeah, The Charmings is a show that needs a Blu-ray release.
The Charmings, yes.
How did that show get lost amongst the crowd? I mean, Sledgehammer has a full DVD release. It came on after Sledgehammer. What the hell?
I'll take The Charmings over Chips 99, I think.
All right, so there's two things in that. One is a sort of constant irritation, and I'll go with that second. The first one I mentioned before, but is the golem that allowed itself to be stared down by Kristen Stewart. I mean, good Lord, just eat her. just pick her up and snap her in half and eat her. You're like 19 feet tall, and she's like 5'2". Just eat her. So there's that, and then there's also, like I said, a constant irritation where you've got, because of course, you know, if you're doing the Snow White story, you've got to have the dwarves. The idea of putting big name actors who are not dwarves, like Bob Hoskins, and casting them as dwarves and then CG shrinking them. Mm-hmm. There's just no point to this. You can find dwarves who want an acting job. You can find them.
Yes.
There are plenty.
Warwick Davis runs.
Yeah, and it's
an agency that places them. Yes.
Yeah, right. And I mean, you can get, you know, more than Warwick Davis and what's his name that plays Mini-Me?
Bryn Troyer.
Bryn Troyer. Thank you. Sorry. You can find seven. You can find seven, and they don't cost that much relative to Bob Hoskins. I don't get it. Bob Hoskins doesn't have a big enough role in this movie to account for however much he was paid for this. So shrinking normal size actors to dwarf proportion is probably takes the cake for me.
All right. All right. With that, Mac, we are in the meat of our awards. So we have four categories left, and then the big ones.
Home stretch.
Home stretch. So what do we have first?
All right. First, our last kind of negative category before we get to the good stuff,
right,
which would be our least favorite DVD or Blu-ray release.
Least favorite DVD, Blu-ray release. All right. Eric, why don't you kick us off for this one?
All right. Well, keeping in line with my stream of non-Snow White and the Huntsman related answers. Surprise pick. I'm going to go with the Moonrise Kingdom Blu-ray, only because I like the movie so much, I wish it had gotten a better high-def treatment. Image is so-so, but there's just a complete lack of any bonus features, and hoping that it eventually gets the standard Wes Anderson Criterion release, because it deserves at least an audio commentary or something.
Yeah.
There were just a couple really brief promotional featurettes, and that was it. So,
how have Wes Anderson Blu-rays been in the past?
The ones that have it seems like there's kind of like a bare bones one to start, and then it goes off to Criterion. Like Darjeeling Limited,
sure.
I reviewed and liked, but again, lackluster. DVD release, and then a couple years later ended up on Criterion in a much nicer package. So I'm hoping that that this movie gets the same treatment. So.
Do you think they might skimp on spending money on it because they expect the Criterion treatment in the, on the back end?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Maybe. I don't know why. I can't remember who put it out, if it was Fox or someone else. Maybe Troma. But
probably Troma.
Probably Troma. But yeah, now it's just nothing. That's an excellent question.
All right. Daryl, how about you? Least favorite DVD or Blu-ray?
I hope I don't steal yours, Dave. I'm going with the Raid Redemption DVD Blu-ray release.
You didn't steal mine, but that's a good one.
It's such a fantastic action movie. Yes. I mean, it's everything you want from an action movie. And it is a god-awful high-def transfer.
Shockingly.
Shockingly. Well, and I found out...
to the point I would prefer my ultraviolet. You know?
Yeah. No, and I was talking to some people about this, some of my cameraman friends, and a lot of what they were talking about was that the cameras that were used and the lenses that were used don't lend themselves to high definition transfer, which is some kind of justification. But this isn't some other Indonesian action movie we're
right.
talking about.
Right.
This is one of the finest action movies I've ever seen.
Yes.
Torn asunder by its high def release. It just looks, it's a travesty. It just looks terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, very unfortunate, and I would maybe, you know, hopefully your friend's right, because I can't imagine Sony willfully putting it out like that, so unfortunate. Okay, mine is, and this is, this goes towards content as well, but movie called The FP was released, and that had a little bit of hype around it, kind of this cool, you know, this cool indie movie that might be a cult classic, and I hated it, viscerally hated it, and it was basically it's kind of like a comedy, it's a dark comedy, I suppose, dystopian future, and the youth of the future compete in like Dance Dance Revolution types of games. And you know, hey, sounds funny. I agree. I'm with you. I laughed originally, and the first few minutes I said this is funny, but the joke never evolved, and it just stayed like that. And worse, the director and the writer rather just. Just created his own futuristic youth vernacular, you know, and it was painful to listen to, and you had to, like, concentrate to sort – it's like watching The Wire, except, you know, the payoff isn't any kind of – it's the opposite of The Wire. The payoff is, wow, I'm listening, deciphering this language, and I'm ending up with this crap. And it was – so it was not funny. It was terrible, boring. I had a really bad reaction to it. And plus, I mean, the HD was okay, but it was all dark. It was just super dark and just punctuated by this Dance Dance Revolution lighting. But and I actually blamed the crystal clear master audio transfer because it made the stupid dialogue, you know, that much clearer, and I hated listening to it. So screw you, FP.
If only you could muddle the dialogue.
Yeah. So, at Draft House Films. Response for this. I don't know where they came up with this, but ugh. No thanks. Mac, to you.
All right, for mine, this really isn't a bad disc, but it's just some bizarre choices. Back in January, to promote the Blu-ray release of Star Trek The Next Generation, they put out this promo disc called Star Trek The Next Level. It's three episodes of The Next Generation, and the whole point of it is to like show off how good the Blu-rays were eventually going to look, right? Unfortunately, they put on the very first episode, the pilot. That was not the show's finest hour, far from it. If you're familiar with the episode, the encounter at Farpoint, you know what I mean. It's very clunky and very slowly paced. The special effects at the end are kind of, you know, obviously models. And a whole lot of time is devoted to Wesley Crusher acting like a total diphead.
You're right.
And the other, one of the other episodes is The Inner Light, which is a classic episode. We all love it. But most of it takes place on this really dry, arid planet where there's a drought. And so the picture is intentionally like washed out to make it look like, you know, it's all in a desert and everything's all dry. Which means we don't really get to see the Blu-ray tech at its best in that episode. Mm. So it's an episode we all love, but if we, you know, they were supposed to be showing off, you know, the tech specs, the audio visual, and two out of your three episodes aren't top of the line. So, I don't know. It was supposed to sell me on how great the Blu-rays are going to be, and it didn't quite get there. The good news is I hear the Blu-rays actually do look really good. So, there's that.
We'll take the little ones. So,
okay. And you can just fast forward past Wesley Crusher.
Don't we all? Is that just kind of the way you live your life anyway? So, okay. Next up, I believe we all went. So now we're going to get – this is – the last three categories are just feel-good positivity, man. So favorite DVD Blu-ray release of the year. Favorite DVD Blu-ray release of the year. So, Mac, why don't you start us off with this one?
Okay. I'm not sure if this also counts as the category release or not, catalog release, excuse me. But I went with the Blu-ray release of Little Shop of Horrors. Mm. The alternate ending for this movie for years has been like a movie holy grail. You know, it's been the stuff of legend, and very few people have ever seen it. But with this Blu-ray, they've taken the alternate ending, they've fully restored it. You get to watch, this disc has a branching option where you can watch the original or this new version. The alternate ending is like 30 minutes long. It has three songs that weren't in the movie originally, and it ends with this just huge, elaborate special effects sequence that was done all in miniatures by hand, and it's absolutely amazing.
This is the 1987 Little Shop of Horrors, right?
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Frank Oz directed one, starring Rick Moranis, the musical. Yeah. A very funny movie, absolutely hilarious. You know, very well made. Frank Oz and the Jim Henson folks did the puppetry with the alien plant. It looks just great. Rick Moranis and Ellen Green and Steve Martin, they're all just hilarious in the movie. So the movie's great. And then now, you know, after all these years, we finally get the alternate ending. And not only that, but we get it in just this spectacular fashion. And this is exactly how these things should go. You know? And if you don't like the alternate ending, just pick up your remote, press a button, and you've got the original film just as you like it, right there on the same disc. So that's definitely my pick for best of the year.
All right. Good. Daryl, best favorite DVD Blu-ray release of the year?
I've got two, and I'm not sure which to pick, and I think I'm just going to go ahead and go with the Universal Classic Monsters Collection.
Good choice.
It's like a 10-disc set of all the, or a good number of the Dracula, Frankenstein, Wolfman, Mummy groups. And they had gone and Universal had gone and released 3 to 5 disc sets of a bunch of these things in previous years. But they fully restored them all. They're full special featured. It's a huge set. It's not even that expensive relative to how many discs you get. And, really does justice to some amazing early films, especially if you're a horror fan. I mean, it's the end all and be all of early horror, all sitting in one box.
Nice, Eric.
All right. Well, I'm not going with a different Universal release. They put out a lot of good stuff this year. I'm gonna go with Jaws. Their release of Jaws. Which looks and sounds amazing and has a ton of bonus features, and is one of two Spielberg related Universal releases for the year that I could have picked, but I picked this over E.T. And it is a great movie and a great release. So
yeah, I heard excellent things about Jaws. All right, well, those are all classics, way more classic than mine. But my favorite of the year has to be, as much as I dumped on the FP from Draft House Films, they get my favorite release as well, and that is Miami Connection. just a legendary B-movie, horrible B-movie that is right up there with Psycho Kickboxer and Gymkhana. Lovingly given the Blu-ray treatment, we get, again, really quickly, it's about a band called Dragon Sound and their battle with drug dealers and motorcycle riding ninjas. And by the end of the movie, you don't even know why they're fighting anymore. But that is not the point. So
neither do they.
No one knows. Nobody knows it's gone. But it's made earnestly, so it's not some lame, too cool for school, you know, tongue-in-cheek thing. These guys really tried their best to make a kick-ass movie. And it failed utterly, and just watching that failure is great. A lot of deleted scenes, including a captivating how they purchased and installed their mailbox sequence, which everyone was dying for.
That was deleted?
Shockingly, it was deleted. But funny enough, as my wife was watching this with me, we were making note of this. There was a scene in there with one of the guys at the mailbox saying, wow, that mailbox is really tall. And we understand the deleted scene really clarified why that mailbox is tall. So, well done. So we got a reunion concert with these guys as well, where they sing their hits Against the Ninja and Friends Forever. Just a fantastic movie. Lots of like commentary track, which is pretty hilarious for the poor guy who put this movie together. Just kind of regaled us about the terrors and the trials and tribulations of trying to get someone to buy it. And he was just talking about how he showed it to everybody, and they just told him how terrible it was. So and they forced him to change the ending. And again, great ending as well. Fantastic alternate ending, right up there with Silver Dream Racer as far as totally different way to end the movie. So Miami Connection can't recommend it highly enough. But forever, I mean, it's really in that rarefied air. So I would say you got Gymkhana, Sidekick Boxer, and For Your Height Only is up there as well.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it really is in that Mount Olympus of terrible movies.
You've got to hand it to groups like Alamo Drafthouse and Severin Films and Blue Underground for taking movies that nobody gives a crap about.
Right.
Or should. I mean, there are certainly people, myself included, who do, but who shouldn't give a crap about these films, who are given near criterion level releases.
That's right. Yeah. And they track down the
They're like
air
overboard.
Conditioner repairmen, and they track them down now, you know.
and the guy doesn't remember being in the movie at all because he's been on meth for the last 25 years.
Yes.
But they still get him to talk about the movie.
Yes.
And they do everything they can to give this full experience. That movies like big budget modern releases from Universal, from Paramount, from whomever, just don't get.
Yeah.
You know, so you've got – I'm reviewing this week The Wild Geese, some – it's a Severin release of Richard Burton and Richard Harris and Roger Moore as mercenaries, and they're all like 60-year-old mercenaries. And nobody cares. But there's like 3 hours of friggin' special features on this disc. And I don't want to watch them. I have to. I don't want to. But it's the point of like these groups that are really giving credence to these awful movies.
Yes.
And you got to hand it to them for
very
that.
Lovingly, yeah, lovingly.
They really care.
For sure. Okay, Mac, what's our next one?
All right, next we're going to the world of television for our favorite TV show of the year.
Favorite TV show of the year. All right, I will go first this time. I will have to say my TV viewing has dropped dramatically this year. Overall, it has really just bottomed out. So so as I sift through the debris of what really stands out and what I like, and I can't remember what I said last year. It may have been this. Actually, it probably wasn't because the season was not great. But this season really bounced back, Justified. It'd be Justified from FX. So that's a January show. But following the first season, fantastic. Second one fell off a bit. I thought they kind of lost their way. And the third one really rebounded well. Great movie, a great TV show, rather. You know, just top to bottom, super entertaining. A lot of characters really coming into their own now. Fantastic villain. It all came together nicely, and just every episode is just hugely entertaining. Perfect mix of kind of the old west gunslinging with some dark humor, some dark, dry humor, and it is just a very entertaining construct. So
yeah, I've really got to check that show out.
Definitely.
Timothy Oliphant is just the guy that I hate more than anybody in Deadwood.
Oh, yeah.
So it makes it hard. You know, you build these associations with people. It's like, that's the guy I want to strangle.
Like, you hate his character? You hate his character?
Is that yeah, I hate his character. I mean, it's just, and I don't, I've never really seen him in anything, you know, beyond Deadwood, so it's hard to know what his acting abilities are beyond this. He's the main character, you know, essentially the main character in Deadwood, and he's the guy I want to strangle. He ruins everything. And so it makes it hard to sit down and, like, I want to watch him and say I want to watch him in something else. But I've heard too much good stuff about Justified to not.
He's really likable and charming.
Yeah.
In Justified.
Having never seen Deadwood, I will say that he is. Yeah. So I don't, I'm not tainted, but he is fantastic here.
I'm shocked that Daryl hates something.
Yeah, oh, God, I know.
Why?
That and Jack and Jill. So there you go. Okay. Well, Daryl, why don't you go with your favorite TV of the year?
Well, I could go with the low-hanging fruit of Community because I do love that show. But I think that my actual answer is going to be this previous season of Mad Men. They didn't go into too many new places, but the performances seem to get better and better all the time. The characters seem to get deeper and deeper all the time. Every year, and after 6 years of the show or 5 years of the show, it's a I don't know how many shows that I can say this about, but it seems better today than it was when it debuted. It's more cinematic.
Definitely the most one of the most shocking scenes I've ever seen on television was in this season.
Which one?
The opening the door to discover Lane's fate.
Oh, but and the funny thing about that was the whole thing was kind of
it was improv.
It was improv, and the whole sequence was kind of funny. Like they
yeah right they that's right
he had tried to kill himself. Spoiler alert. He had tried to kill himself in the garage with the Jaguar, but Jaguars always break down.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah, that those were, it was such a so they kind of set you up for that, and they hit you with like.
And then they hit you with a really hard scene.
It is a very disturbing sequence. Very disturbing. Yeah.
It had its best, you know, like in that Jaguar scene where they make fun of the Jaguar manufacturing.
And they think you may be off the hook too.
Right. Yeah. To his death, like that single episode really gets to the really funny and the really heavy parts that Mad Men delivers on a consistent week by week basis, and with the great performances and the great cast, I can't wait to see where they go from here. Like everything that Mad, and it took me a while to actually agree to sit down and watch it, but once I did, I am an absolute avid fan.
All right. What they do. Excellent. Eric.
Oh, sorry, I had to put my headphones back on. I haven't seen season 5 of Mad Men yet. All right. I'm going to go with another season 5 show, Breaking Bad. We're halfway through the final season of Breaking Bad, and it is my favorite show on TV. Could have gone with Community as well, but I burned that earlier. So.
It's low hanging fruit. It's a great show. Nobody
it is. Yeah, I mean, it's but though, that's it's a debut. Have yet to dig into it as much as same as I've yet to dig into The Wire. But man, Breaking Bad just continues to be great. I mean, you know, I think that maybe the first half of the season had some points that weren't quite as high as some of the previous seasons, but it also had just some great gut punch moments, and I can't wait to see how the whole thing wraps up next summer. Boy. Feels like a long way away.
All right, Mac.
There you go.
Yeah, like you, Dave, I haven't watched a whole lot of TV this year. There's only a few shows that I've really just made it a point to catch up on a weekly basis. But among those, the one that really caught my attention, the show that I was really, really excited about, it's like every week, every new episode was just an event. And that's The Legend of Korra. This aired over the summer. This is, of course, the follow-up to Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Oh, that's right. You were right.
Yeah, this series, not the god-awful Shyamalan movie, but this series. This is an animated series, again, kind of very action-adventure stuff. while Last Airbender was, like, high fantasy, this Legend of Korra takes place about, like, 70 to 80 years later. And in that time, the world's gone through an industrial revolution. So now there are cars, there are police officers with rifles, and yet you still have people who can control the elements by doing magical kung fu. And so it's this mixing and matching of all these various sort of action styles. And it's very clever, very inventive. The characters are really interesting and likable, and a very intense, scary villain. And it's just, like I said, every episode just felt like a big event. Because the folks who make this, they don't think small. And I'm reminded, definitely the high point of the season, they have a sport that they play using their, you know, bending powers, where they bend the elements. Pro-bending, they call it. And
pro-bending?
Pro-bending, yes.
All right.
And it's real pretty cool the way they do it and the way they animate it. And it's right in the middle of the pro-bending championships that the villains stage their big attack, at which point you have pretty much all of the main cast using all of their superhuman powers in different ways and really clever, inventive ways. And then you have our hero, Korra, just going to just extreme, absurd lengths trying to reach the enemy and catch him before he makes his escape. And it was just really just action-packed, edge-of-your-seat excitement. And that carried right on through to the finale. So can't wait for the new season to start next summer. Again, seems like a long way away. And, but just an amazing show.
All right, excellent. And with that, we are at our final category of the evening, and it is favorite movie of 2012. So, Daryl, why don't you kick us off?
I would say Snow White and the Huntsman.
You should.
For the cycle, but that's wouldn't be honest. My favorite movie of 2012 is Prometheus.
Ah, a divisive film, to say the least.
It's divisive for me, and, you know, I mean, I love the mythology of, you know, not just what Ridley Scott created, but the way that each of the first four films, which all of which I like a lot, took different tacts. You know, one's a horror film, one's an action film, one's a prison film, one's an art film. It took all the things from that, and including some of the drawings that H.R. Giger did for the original Alien that didn't make it into the first film, and sort of gelled it all into this prequel that isn't a prequel of the Nostromo. It's a prequel to how we came to be and how the main alien came to be. And I just found it extremely smart and well acted, and with one of the most visceral scenes in a movie that I've seen in a few years. And that's, you know, Noomi Rapace, as the main character in the self-surgery scene.
Yeah.
Absolutely visceral and just really in every way pushed all of my buttons. Everything I could have wanted in an Alien prequel was there, and I couldn't have asked for more. And it was the only movie that I've ever seen in the theater in 3D. So, you know, I justified spending an extra $4 on it. So that should count for something.
Nice. It should. $4 worth of something.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. Nothing to sneeze at. Eric, favorite movie, 2000.
I'm going back to the one I cannot spoil. A Cabin in the Woods is my favorite movie of the year.
Ooh, all right.
I had so much fun, probably more fun than any other movie that I saw this year. I just really loved all the twists and turns and all the creativity. I think it's I as much as I enjoyed the Avengers, I think this is the better Joss Whedon movie of the year. And as soon as you see it, Dave, we can talk about
great.
This movie.
Fantastic.
Someday there are the statute of limitations on this movie. It's like 5 years in the future.
Yeah, it's gonna be great.
It's awesome.
It'll be a great day. That happens. All right, Mac.
All right,
movie, 2012.
This has been a good year for movies.
It hasn't been bad.
There's been lots of movies this year that I've liked. You know, cut some of my runners up include like Looper. Real underrated was Pirates: Band of Misfits, which I've been championing. But you know, at the end of the day, movies are entertainment.
Yes.
And it's just like, well, what entertained me the most? What was just the most pure entertainment? So I've just got to go with my gut.
And Betty White, champion for animals.
Nope, you're close.
Okay.
I got to go with The Avengers.
The Avengers.
Yes.
A dream come true, not maybe a dream come true, but something you had been waiting to see for a while, right?
Yes, very excited about. And
even after the Thor movie.
Yeah, right. I liked the Thor movie. that's under my guilty pleasure category.
Yes.
But yeah, I think they really pulled it off. It had the big spectacle, the big action, you know, getting all those different characters and all those actors together in one movie. They really made it work. Lots of witty lines in the script, lots of humor. You know, what can I say? I think, they made a really smart decision by having the Hulk be a supporting character. And that way we kind of got to see him at his best, and he almost stole the show a little bit. And that huge finale and the Battle of New York was just, you know, the big roller coaster ride of the summer. And it was just pure fun, pure entertainment.
Yeah, can't argue with that. And I agree with you. 2012 was pretty strong, especially for genre movies, I thought. So, like, The Raid Redemption, probably my favorite martial arts movie, one of my favorite martial arts movies ever made. I know Dark Knight Rises, I do love. In fact, I love it more and more as I see it. The Avengers, like, the pinnacle of that kind of comic book movie making, I thought. But my favorite movie for 2012 really surprised me by how much I loved it, and it is The Hobbit.
Wow.
I love The Hobbit. I've seen it twice already. It is a movie that is 3 hours long. It does not feel like 3 hours. It's funny. It's like genuinely funny. It's amazing. It's like losing yourself in that world again. It's great. There's a lot of cool stuff that it's building towards. And it actually made me pick up the book and start reading the book for the first time, which again, you think through, we talked about osmosis, you would have thought through osmosis, I would have read the book, you know, by accident, just accidentally read the book, but I never got around to it. And, The Hobbit just works for me. It just
a little dry.
Books, yeah. And it is kind of interesting because, going from the movie to the book, it's kind of, you're right, you're just kind of moving along, but it's fun to kind of pick out some of the lines that Jackson uses verbatim in the movie, you know, like the songs are in there and there's just lines. So that's kind of fun to discuss.
So he took the songs and he had music written for them for
yep,
the movie.
Yep. Yep.
That's so, good for him. Good yeah, for him on that.
Yeah.
That,
it's cool. Like, smart move. Yeah. So like, I mean, the dwarves song is essentially the theme, but they sing it dwarf like a cappella, you know, but there's they also do their little song that Baggins hates. I know it's just, man, I wasn't really looking forward to this movie. I went to see it dutifully with a friend of mine, just really kind of loved it to the point I'm dying for any information of what's coming. And it just worked completely and utterly for me. And really kind of sparked the way I felt when I first saw Fellowship of the Ring. You know, and you just kind of get blown away by that world. And so kudos to Peter Jackson for recreating that, which is no easy task, especially, like you said, Daryl, with a book that's probably not as rich as far as source material goes, you know, than The Lord of the Rings. But I am in, I am down, and I don't even care, like, I don't care if 3 movies, bring it on. I'll take it all. Give me more. I'll take it. So yeah, that is my – I didn't see it high frame rate or 3D because I figured I would – puke my guts out, so I gladly went with the 2D. So yeah, and with that, Mac, that concludes this edition of the Busters. I have to say, I think for the first time ever, we had no overlap, right?
That's true.
I think we had all unique answers. So that's impressive.
At least overlap with each other.
Daryl. Yeah. Oh, well, Daryl overlapped.
Yeah, well,
Snow White is the big winner.
I'm sort of a one-trick pony, as it goes.
That's right. So, this edition of the Busters is brought to you by Snow White. Melville.
I didn't get four, though. I tried to get four. I couldn't get four.
I know that the Busters, even more than the Golden Globes, is a good predictor of what's going to win the Oscar, you know, the Academy Awards. So look forward to Snow White and the Huntsman sweeping the category, the Schindler's List of 2012.
Everything that I like or talk about never It's basically the anti-Oscar.
Now you went with the Nickelodeon Kids Choice Award.
I'm more on along the MTV Video Music Awards.
All right. Well, again, thank you to Eric, Daryl, and Mac. Thank you to DVD Bird for hosting us. This is the first time I've ever thanked them, so thank you, Mike Stalian, for your wonderful ambush topic. That is it for the Busters. That is it for 2012. We'll see what joys and riches 2013 holds for us. And with that, Mac, take us away.
May the odds be ever in your favor.